Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Wednesday, September 18th. And today, some more with Scott Hastings and finally, the last installment of our discussions about these top 100 lists. This is your boy, Matt Shook, a sports writer here in the Motor City, covering the NBA for the Associated Press and the Detroit News, a Pistons fan and follower my whole life, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Thank you for making us part of your daily routine. Today, well, this is it, the final day that we're going to be talking about these 100 lists. I know it's gotten into old bit territory at this point, but I promise we will retire the discussions unless you guys have some reactions you want to pass along over the next couple of days. For my purposes, had enough with them. And more importantly today, Scott Hastings, part two, the Pistons world champion from 1990, talked to us for the second part of his two-parter interview. Just some great inside stories about the Bad Boys. Really excited to share this one with you guys as he goes through the NBA Finals talk from 1990 against the Portland Trailblazers, some current NBA talk as well. All-around good guy. But if you haven't listened to Tuesday's podcast, part one with Scott Hastings, you should stop right now, download that one, and listen to that first before you get into Scott Hastings part two a little bit later on in today's show. But give me a follow at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that. Also, the Locked On Pistons podcast Twitter account, and also get in touch with us at Locked On Pistons - Matt Shook on Facebook too. And you can call and leave a voice message and or text the number here and give us your 2 cents. We got Media Day coming up. Which Piston do you want me to talk to, and which ones, what questions would you like asked? If they're appropriate and pretty good questions, or if they're maybe a little bit on the fuzzy side of appropriate for the venue of Media Day or training camp, let me know what you think and who you want to hear from on the podcast, and we will try to track them down as we head up to either Media Day or training camp in Ann Arbor over the next week or so. But that number to call to leave a voice message or to text is 810-666-1546. Again, that's 810-666. Vinnie Johnson, Joe Dumars, Terry Mills, 810-666-1546. Like I said, Media Day coming up on Monday, Ann Arbor next week as well. Excited to get this thing rolling. We are almost ready for NBA action. October 3rd is the Pistons preseason opener against the Oklahoma City Thunder, and I believe it's October 14th, not in front of me as we speak, but I think that's the correct date for the opener to the season at home against the Brooklyn Nets, a team that I'm sure that a lot of people will be picking as a pretty good team. Even though Sean Marks is doing a good job running the Nets so far, I still don't think they're anything to consider as far as the playoff picture or anything like that. But I remember a lot of these national analysts were talking about them being a dangerous team last year. Well, dangerous in that they were dangerously tough to watch as far as fans. Now, the ESPN NBA rank list came out for part two of it on Tuesday, 50 through 31, and we figured that Andre Drummond and Blake Griffin would be on that list. And I know we've been talking about these lists at extensive length over the past week or so as Sports Illustrated, by the way, jumped the gun on ESPN with the NBA rank articles. They must have figured when those ESPN articles came out. I think they've been doing it for about 8 years with NBA rank on ESPN. I think Sports Illustrated has only been a couple years. So kudos for Sports Illustrated for stealing the bit and getting out in front of it a week before ESPN. So some good work there. Good job by those guys at Sports Illustrated. But for the ESPN NBA rank list, number 46 was Andre Drummond, just ahead of Steven Adams, who was 47. So a minor victory there as far as the big man list pecking order there, with Drummond getting ahead of Steven Adams. This was the very same ranking, number 46, that Sports Illustrated had Andre Drummond in last week. I had Drummond at 31 when I jotted these names down in my very unscientific, definitely biased list as well. And it might seem ludicrous to some of you to have him that high, and especially to have him as the highest Piston on my list. And probably to most of the average NBA fans, that might be too high, given that doesn't seem to be a whole lot of uproar about Drummond at 46 in these two lists that were put together by a lot of statistical models and experts and all that other components that were used to put those lists together. Worth noting that in ESPN NBA rank, that Dre was 53 last year. Do you remember where Dre's career was going into last year, where he was 53rd best player going into 17-18, and now he's 46 going into 18-19? Call me crazy, but I thought that he should have made more than a 7-spot leap to 46 after that season he had last year. He cleaned a lot of things up, most notably the free throws, most notably the energy for 48 minutes of action on the court. And it showed me more than he ever had as far as things that he got done, and showed some of the playmaking ability and just some a little bit more awareness on defense. I think he improved a lot last season, and to say he only moved 7 points up, 7 spots as far as moving the needle after all the improvements he made is something that I disagree with. And I know that there's younger players that came up in the league, the Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatums, the Donovan Mitchells of the world that weren't considered for these kind of lists maybe a year ago that made those kind of leaps. But by the way, the list went up to 31 on Tuesday, and so obviously the next couple days we'll have the top 30 coming out. And Jason Tatum has not been on this list. Obviously, he more deserves to be in the top 30 than outside the top 100. So he'll certainly be in the top 30 for ESPN, but I think that's kind of gross. Very good player. Now, I don't have a problem with Jason Tatum. I covered him in high school a little bit. I like the guy. But I look for a little bit of a sophomore slump for him. I think that's a little bit of the Boston media giving him a little bit too much of credit for a very good rookie season. But on the other hand, I thought that Gordon Hayward on this list, as we kind of go through some of the names that jumped out to me in 50 through 31, Gordon Hayward, number 40 by the ESPN NBA rank list. I mean, this is a very good player, an all-star type of player coming into a good situation in Boston. Doesn't seem like there should be really lingering effects from the injury, although completely gruesome, and maybe some psychological impact that he needs to kind of overcome that. And maybe you could see him being a little bit tentative at the beginning of the season. But as far as physical effects from the big injury that he had, I don't see how that might be possible. I've had him at 24 on my list as opposed to 40 from ESPN rank. And another one that I thought was insane, DeMar DeRozan. This guy has all the motivation he needs for a big season in San Antonio. Number 39 on the list from ESPN rank. And I know that the three-pointers aren't what everyone likes to see from the new NBA, but I think he's a top 20 guy, right around about that 20th spot. And I know that might sound crazy to some of you, but DeMar DeRozan at 39, below guys like Otto Porter at 38, who, once again, I just don't see it. I don't get it. And I'm going to keep a real close eye on Otto Porter this coming season, because maybe I'm missing something from him. The Washington Wizards don't scream versatile guys and winning type of guys that have all these talented players in the team that do so many things outside of the box score that create winning atmosphere. That's not what I think about when I see the Washington Wizards. And by the way, Porter behind DeMar DeRozan, just insane. Another one, Devin Booker, 31 ahead of DeMar DeRozan. And I don't necessarily have a big problem with 31. I'd put him probably more in the 40s, but just the fact that DeMar DeRozan is 39 and Devin Booker is 31. It's kind of a polarizing one. I've heard some arguments with Devin Booker either way, because I think he was right around 50 or so on the Sports Illustrated list. So some of the defenders took up for him, and now I think it's kind of swung the other way in the ESPN poll. It's got him too high. Chris Middleton at 35, ahead of DeMar DeRozan once again. And I like Chris Middleton, a reliable scorer, but not a star quality player like DeMar DeRozan is, someone that you want in with the ball in the fourth quarter. I just think that those guys are difference makers. I think that they're people that, and I know that he's put playoff struggles, so maybe that nullifies some of the regular season things he does down the stretch. But, you know, I just don't see Chris Middleton at 35 ahead of DeMar DeRozan by 4 spots. And yes, I will say it, Blake Griffin ahead of DeMar DeRozan? No way to me. Blake was number 41, by the way, on Sports Illustrated lists. My ranking said he was at 42, so I was kind of right with Sports Illustrated there. And the ESPN NBA rank has Blake Griffin at number 33 on this list. So pretty good for Blake Griffin there, being just outside of my made-up metric where I said that the top 30 guys are guys that should be the best player on their team in the NBA. Now, of course, we know that's not the case because a lot of the Warriors are up in that top 30, for instance. But so Blake Griffin, according to this list, at 33 would be a guy who would be one of the best players in the league to have as your second best player on your team, assuming that those top 30 guys would be the best player on those teams. So interesting stuff to think about. If you want to pass along your thoughts, maybe we will air out your laundry and what you think about these lists. Again, I'm done with them. I'm all set with this moving on for the rest of our lives. It's good content. I had fun talking about these last couple weeks, but I've had enough top 100 lists, and I'm ready to talk basketball, get the season started. But football is underway, of course, and how are your fantasy teams doing? I'm a mixed bag right now. I got a couple of 1-2 or an 0-2 team and 2-1-1 teams, I believe. And nobody cares about my fantasy teams. But we do have two fantasy football shows to help you. Locked On Fantasy Football 24/7 gives you all the latest news, waiver suggestions, and injury news as well. And Locked On Fantasy Football is now called Locked On Fantasy Football Experts with amazing guests every day. Monday, we got Tom Kucinich. Tuesday, Eric Edholm. And Wednesdays, we got Jeff Ratliff and Tyler Lechner. But up next, here on the Locked On Pistons podcast, pleasure to be joined by part two of our interview with Scott Hastings, the former world champion from the Detroit Pistons, who's now a Denver radio dude. Be sure to check out part one from Tuesday's podcast before you listen to this. But like we've said, Pistons season is coming up in about a month. 1 month with Vivid Seats, you can attend the game, the concerts, the shows of your choice at a great price. Vivid Seats is the top source for tickets for all the live events that you want to go to. You can sort by price and look for seats in the section and row of your choice. To make things even better, Vivid Seats is giving listeners an exclusive promo code for $20 off orders of $200 or more to save even more money. Go to the App Store, Google Play, download the Vivid Seats app, and use promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off orders of $200 or more. Every purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee, from the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater and more. And your Detroit Pistons, of course. Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app, enter promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off orders of $200 or more. We appreciate your support here on the Locked On Network. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let Vivid Seats help you get to your favorite live event. And I will see you at Little Caesars Arena this season.
Yes, sir!
All right, now we're pleased to be joined by 11-year NBA veteran and a one-time NBA champion with the Detroit Pistons, Scott Hastings from Denver. How's it going, Scott?
Yeah, wonderful, wonderful.
But, Scott, let's talk about Game 5 in Portland. The last play of the game, Chuck Daly's drawn it up. Take us into the huddle before Vinny's shot. Can you take us through those moments and some of the things that were drawn up? I'm assuming that he was calling for Isaiah to just kind of penetrate and see what happens, or do you kind of recall the moments leading up to the big championship shot?
Well, you know, it's really funny. It's that whole series to me is almost like one continuous game that blended into the next. And, you know, we win game one, but really had to fight late. I mean, Portland played really good. And as I remember, it felt like we were kind of fortunate to kind of come back in. Isaiah had a couple of big moments. We win game one. They come in and won game two. And probably the worst thing they could do, and it kind of got back to Isaiah and Bill and everything else. But basically, you know, Terry Porter coming to the locker room, "We ain't coming back here. We ain't coming back here." And,
well, he was right. Back,
yeah, when it was – yeah, he was right. 2-3-2, you know, that was back when the series did that. And I remember going into game three, and to me, game three was the most pivotal game. And two things happened in that game that I'll always remember. One was we come out for game three. And first of all, when we got on the airplane to leave Detroit to go to Portland for game three, holy Toledo, let me tell you, that was an angry, determined, quiet, not quiet like depressed. I'm like talking quiet. Okay, here we come. All right. And we went to the game, and we're doing warm-ups for game three, and we just got to the court. Portland hadn't taken the court yet. We were about to do our layup line. Bill always went first. He's on the right side, and it's back in the old arena that Portland played in, the Rose Garden, I think it was called. Yep. And Bill takes one dribble, and all of a sudden, here comes Portland, and they're going to run across our court. And I watch Bill, and I'm kind of in the back of the line, and Bill stops dribble and puts the ball like he's a fullback about ready to go through the line on a goal line stance. And Jerome Kersey is running out. He's the first one, sees it. And Jerome Kersey has to dodge out of the way because Lambeer Lambeer is going to take Jerome Kersey out in the layup line. Layup line.
I wasn't even waiting until tip-off.
Not even tip-off. Kersey has to jump out of the way. Well, there's this photographer who's not so lucky, and he's just snapping pictures, snap, tap, 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 backing up, and he's all the way on the court now, and he's probably about the block extended, on the court, Laimbeer shifts the ball from his right side to his left like a good running back does, right? Takes his forearm, catches this photographer who's not even paying attention. He's right in the middle of the court now. Forearm shivers this guy, lifts him up, slides him all the way through the baseline and into the first row of the chairs.
Oh, my God, poor guy.
Shifts the ball back to his right hand and lays it up. And I knew right then we were winning game three. And actually, I got to come in a crew support in the first half and actually got to play 2 or 3 minutes in that game. So I was pretty excited about that. In fact, I my big contribution, I think I blocked out Duckworth or Buck Williams. I think it was Buck Williams on a free throw, tried to sneak baseline, and I blocked him out. And that was what Chuck was upset about because they were kind of getting us on the offensive glass. We're not blocking out, not blocking out. And I blocked out Buck Williams all the way into the back stanchion and left him folded inside the back stanchion. And I remember the next time out and the next day we're watching film. Chuck is going back and forth. I mean, here's this great play. We come back, take back our advantage. We're up 2-1, and Chuck's in the film room going back and forth. This is how you block out. And I'm showing me blocking out Buck Williams into the back stand. But then, you know, game three, game four was the most memorable game, you know, with Joe Dumars just going off. And you know, Chuck and Isaiah had learned earlier from Joe's wife and Joe's dad, who he was, you know, we're all close, you know, with their dads, but super, super close with his father, who hadn't been the healthiest guy in the world the last year or so, had passed away. And I would invite all Pistons fans to go back and try to watch that game four and just watch how Joe Dumars, I mean, he is, man, you probably remember, he is hitting shots that you're like, oh my gosh, what is going on here? It was just phenomenal. And then I remember we were so excited. We're one game from closing out, you know, to win an NBA championship. We're now up, 3-1. And there was no celebration because we learned as soon as we got back in the locker room that one of our brothers, you know, their dad had passed. It was solemn. There was no celebration. It was just, you know, for a moment that should probably be, you know, semi-celebratory, was we were all hurting for Joe. And it was really a surreal, just real moment. And they took Joe out. He got on the phone with his mom. And, I mean, it was just, I mean, a lot of tears. Even now I get a little choked up thinking about it. But it was just, you know, like I said a while ago, being part of something bigger than yourself. And then, you know, here comes the game five now. We're up 3-1 and kind of coming back that Joe toughs it out, plays in that game. And the last play, I don't remember how it was drawn up. I don't remember how it was said, but there was no doubt in my mind when Vinny took that shot, he was going to make it. That was kind of the confidence I feel like we lived with and played with at that time with the Pistons. And, you know, Vinny hits this great shot. He was going to take it. I mean, he got it. He waited. He did his best microwave impersonation. He was on fire the whole game. That was the beauty of that game. Between he, Joe, and Isaiah, there's no way all three of them were going to have a bad game at one time. And they were so good at picking each other up. And if two of the three had great games, the opponent was going to lose probably. If all three of them were going to have great games, Scott was going to probably get to play in the end of the game because they were going to get blown out. That's just how dominant those three guys were. But, yeah, and then you won the celebration, and it was just phenomenal and probably the best party I've ever been involved in my life. Following that, and a lot of tired, hungover people. I don't think we celebrated maybe as good as looking now at what the Capitals did when they won their Stanley Cup final.
Ovechkin, yeah.
But it was pretty close. It was a pretty good night. It was wonderful.
just some unbelievable memories there from Scott Hastings. We didn't have the Pistons in the playoffs this year or very many years in the past decade or so. So we did a segment called Pistons Playoff Playback, where I went back and day by day said 17 years ago this happened, 34 years ago this happened. So we talked a lot about those Portland NBA Finals series. And like you said, an unbelievable series. And I would implore fans to get on YouTube. Yeah. Those games are all available. Joe's unbelievable game after his father had passed away that day.
And Matt, remind everybody, he did not know.
No, he didn't. Isaiah and Chuck knew. And the Danny Young knocking down the 35-foot shot to appear to tie the game in game four.
Right.
That ended up being disallowed correctly, turns out, by the officials, but a real close call that could have maybe changed the series a little bit.
Yeah, it was interesting. Down in that corner right in front of their benches, I remember them being happy. And Earl Strom, I believe, if you can look on that, I think my memory serves me right, was one of the officials. And you know, Earl's gone now too. But to me, one of the top two or three officials that's ever blown a whistle in the NBA. There is no one officiating games in the NBA now like Earl. He was the best. I think somebody did a documentary or a short film on Earl once, and he was just outstanding. But he said no, wasn't afraid. And that's what made him good. I mean, this was the NBA championship, and he's not afraid to make the right call, even if it goes against the home team. And I'm not sure a lot of guys would have the intestinal fortitude to say no good, you know. So pretty amazing, and it ended it there. And you know, Terry Porter was correct. We never did have to go back to Detroit.
And like you said, another thing that might be forgotten or went through the cracks a little bit is how good Vinnie Johnson was in that fourth quarter, the entire fourth quarter of Game 5, not just the 007 shot, but just to will his team in position on a night where they probably weren't quite at their best to win in Game 5, and he made all the big shots down the stretch as well. Just an unbelievable watch for Pistons fans to go back. We're here with Scott Hastings. You can find him on Twitter at Scott Hastings. He's on the radio in Denver. You're a guy who missed out during your playing days, the pre-Twitter, pre-social media world. What do you think about how that would have maybe changed things for a team like the Bad Boys back in the day? If things like that were around, and maybe some of these behind-the-scenes stories would have gotten out a little bit more.
From how serious those guys were, I got to believe Isaiah or Lambeer would have said, you know, and you remember LeBron does it late every year also. He gets off and shuts down his Twitter feed every year. I got to believe that's probably what's going to happen. They says, we don't do this. You didn't see guys talk trash about guys on our team. And we had enough moments that we settled stuff between each other. It was an open locker room as far as anybody had a voice. And I always try to tell everybody, and you don't get this very often. You don't get this anymore at all, really. But there was 12 alpha dogs in that locker room. And I mean, necessarily, there were 12 alpha dogs, but there was one leader of the pack, and that was Isaiah. We understood that we all had a voice, but the last voice, you know, that had something to say was going to be Isaiah. You know, that's still the lead dog, if you will, but everybody else was alpha dogs. And to their credit also, if Isaiah was in the wrong, you could tell him that. And, you know, whether he liked it or nobody liked it, and no one likes criticism. But I've been the therapist since that time, and you know, everybody's first reaction when they feel attacked is to be defensive. But if you thought he was doing something wrong, you could say something to him. And I heard him and Lambeer have many discussions like that. So it was a really open forum team that everybody had a voice. And that's rare. I mean, you can go in locker rooms now, and I know they've expanded it. The guys have gotten a lot younger. I mean, Isaiah back then was probably an outlier coming out, I think, after a sophomore or freshman year, but he came out early, so he was one of those young guys too. But nowadays, you know, you got so many young guys, and the locker room is quiet. I'm here in Denver, and I think Denver has the requisite talent to compete for an NBA championship. But the one question I would have, and this filters back to my Piston days, do they have the strong enough one, two, or three leaders up at the top to pull guys in, rein guys in, say, let's do it this way, we're not doing it the right way, whatever. That'll be when they get to that next level, that'll be what happens, that leader steps up and shows himself here as for the Nuggets in the future.
Yeah, super talented team that we're obviously keeping an eye on. We got Gary Harris from Michigan State out there, Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic, and just like you said, a team that has not really any ceiling with how young and how talented these guys are right now. But we'll see how quickly the good times are ahead for the Nuggets in Denver. But like you said, like you're giving us the analysis you give on the radio every day there. How did you settle on Denver in terms of staying there in your post-playing career, and how are you liking the radio and the media world?
Well, I've been doing it now longer than I played. So, you know, I love it. It's a great job. And it's you know this, if you want to be good at it, you got to work at it. But I stayed in Denver. I had a chance to still go and play. In fact, the day I decided I was going to not play, Mike Fratello, who I played with in Atlanta, had just taken the Cleveland job and wanted me to come to Cleveland. Denver, what people don't realize, there's 300 days of sunshine in Denver. Now, we'll get cold and all that, but, you know, when the winter comes into Detroit, I always said it started about Halloween, and then the sun came back out about tax day on April 15th.
We don't want to think about that right now, Scott. Yeah, we're still enjoying the sunshine as of now.
Well, there you go. Well, in Denver, I'm telling you, there's more days of sunshine in Denver than there is in Southern California, and that's a weatherman statistical fact. So I just, you know, spent 2 years here. The weather's unbelievable. I had young kids in school. And the president at the time, Tim Leiwicki, you know, wanted me around, and said, we got a couple positions. Would you be interested? And so I said, yeah, sure. I'd done some media stuff anyway with some guys. And my whole thought was, to be honest with you, Matt, that I was going to go from, playing to coaching, or, you know, who knows, someday front office. And so I kind of said yes to the media stuff just to stay in touch with the teams, the Pistons or the Nuggets, with my last team, obviously, and they were close. In fact, next year would be the year, my first year gone, and I'm doing television for them, is the first time an 8 seed beats a number 1 seed. So they were right there on that verge of being a fun team. So I wanted to stay close and always with an eye on that I would eventually just go either into the coaching staff or front office. And then, you know, here you go, some 25 years later, I'm still doing TV and radio. So not the journey or path I thought I would take, but it's been a hell of a ride. Sure, it's a lot of fun.
Well, no surprise to me and a lot of the Pistons fans out here that you've found a way to be entertaining folks on a daily basis and staying in the game and giving the analysis as well. But Scott Hastings, thanks for taking the time to join us here on Locked On Pistons. Any parting words for the fans here in Detroit?
Yeah, keep the faith. It's a process. I know, and I've talked to some people there that are in nice positions. To say a word, I know the owner wants to win. I know the president wants to win. I know a lot of other executives want to win. And I don't know how close they are. You got to get a little lucky. You got to be good in the draft. You got to get the right guys. But there is no better place to play basketball when it's rolling than in Detroit, because Detroit fans appreciate quality basketball. You saw that during the Larry Brown and Chauncey Billups era. You saw that in the Isaiah era. They will come and you know, a beautiful stadium downtown, and good for us, because I can walk out and get a Coney dog, leave my hotel, walk a block and a half from where we stay, and there's the Coney dog place. So that's always good for me. I say just hold the faith. I, you know, there's no better franchise when they're winning than Detroit.
World champion Scott Hastings, of the formerly of the Detroit Pistons. Thanks for taking the time to join us. And that was former member of the Bad Boys, Scott Hastings. Thanks for him to take the time from Denver to join us and talk about some of the memories. Really enjoyed that chat, and I hope you guys did too. But go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Use promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off orders of $200 or more. Every purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater and more, Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app and enter promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off orders of $200 or more. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let Vivid Seats help you get to your favorite live event. And I will see you at Little Caesars Arena this season. This is your host, Matt Shook. Thanks for joining us for Locked On Pistons, another episode in the books. And thanks again to Scott Hastings for taking the time to be with us this week as well. And we will talk to you guys later on this week. Thanks for listening.